Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Yes, indeed. 11 after 5, and we're joined on the line by Jabulile Botelezi Kalonji. Kunjani, sis?
I'm very well. How are you doing? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Are you doing well?
Yes, I can't complain. By God's grace, we still.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. Man, before we get into business, let's talk about the other business just as a side. Heart of a Homemaker, how's that doing?
Well, that's an exciting part of my life, actually, Zama.
Yeah,
I think it's been nice and refreshing to see how people receive the book and how they're internalizing it, interpreting it. And really, it's out of my hands now, and it's been just heartwarming, I guess, to see Heart of a Homemaker find its home in other people's hearts the world, literally.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic stuff. Well, Jabulile Botelezi Kalonji is an author, among other titles that she has, and the book is out. We'll talk about that slightly later. Today, we're talking about young people in leadership. And so many innovative business leaders of today took chances and made leaps into leadership positions early in their careers. Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon. But, you know, first thought of the idea when he was just 30 years old, CNBC reports. Now, Brian Chesky, who was 27 when he founded Airbnb, and Steve Jobs was 25 when Apple went public, so according to Forbes. So is there room for young African leaders to take their place and make a mark in their respective industries? And this is what we are going to be discussing with Jabulile. Now, Jabulile, in your view, is there really a reluctance to give young people more responsibility in terms of leadership in various sectors of society, or is it just an unfounded concern?
Yeah, actually, to be honest with you, I think it's there is reluctance, which is also quite unfortunate because, you know, people shy away, leaders to be specific, shy away from allowing young people to lead. Especially leaders who are at the helm of leadership, who stand in a position to influence a decision of a young person being brought up, you know, being allowed to serve. And I think it's always disheartening. Of course, this is not a generalization. There are leaders out there who are really awesome mentors, who lead by example, who really do allow young people a chance and give them a chance. And even when the chance is not, they've been created. But there's also a section, and I think it's very important to highlight this particular one, of organizations in general that tend to overlook a younger person for a role that they are fully capacitated for just because they are not, in essence, old enough or mature enough to handle the height of, you know, that responsibility that comes with an office. And I think this, for me, is very problematic. Because we need to get to a level, or we need to get to a level as organizations, as a society at large, really, that where we get to trust young people with positions of leadership. And I'm not talking like puppet stuff, right? I'm talking proper leadership role.
Yeah, where they take and decisions.
If we feel that we're not as sure, if we feel we're not sure about their capabilities, then we have to skill them, upskill them, and train them, and mentor them, and support them. But they do need to get into those ranks and lead, especially for positions that have to do with youth development and youth leadership and youth work. Nobody can do that better than another younger person who has been gifted as a leader. So I think we, I mean, it's, you know, there's two sides to a coin. There's a good bunch of people who really do open up opportunities for young people, and there are those who deliberately close them because for some reason you've got to be, I don't know, 55 years old, 60 to lead young people, and it absolutely doesn't make sense to me. I think we can still give young people a chance To lead organizations that are directly linked to the development of young people.
Yeah. I want to actually look at this issue, in broader terms. I'm looking at political leadership, for instance, and we see, we're about to get to elections, I think in about a month's time or so, in South Africa. And I'm looking at political parties that are running for elections, and I see an emergence of a young people actually leading political parties, and it seems as though it's a new found life in young people. Yet we do know that at the end of the day, we may end up with the same old people. Now it looks like even not only in corporates but in society in general, people would want to get older people in positions of responsibility because they think that these guys have walked the road and they've been there forever and they don't have issues with their insufficient experience and all of that. Now, society does play a role with this kind of thinking, not only in the country, by the way, across the continent, in fact, the world over. But the fact that people like Joe Biden in his old age can still run for office and win means that, there's a long way to go. Recently in Nigeria as well, an old man running against a fairly young man, and he won, swiped him off. So it looks like society in general has this. What do we do to actually get to a paradigm shift where we hand over the reins really to young people? Because it's not only in corporates, really. I think it's societies in general.
Yeah, your question is very important, Zama. In fact, you've used one of my favorite examples of Nigeria. Look, without getting too political, but I mean, really, for the life of me, you get to really want to understand the thinking and the rationale of Africans, or just people in general, of a society, if you will, that would see it fit to elect somebody who could hardly walk, somebody who could hardly do anything effective, even by themselves, and trust them with type of heightened leadership of, overlooking over an entire country. And I think for me, there's a very serious endemic, I really call it a disease, across Africa. And it's not just Nigeria. You find it in Cameroon. You find it in one of my favorite countries, is it Guinea? Gabon, rather, sorry.
Oh, sorry, Gabon.
Yeah, so if it's not an elderly person, it's all the family legacies that keep on taking on legacy from one legacy, one generation from to the next, which in my view is absolutely flawed and definitely not right. And I say this because if we're going to talk about the emergence of democracy across the African continent, and also just the emergence of free, not free will per se, but, the whole idea, or at least the ideology of allowing young people space and really us moving in on accord in terms of development and really progress in the name of progress, then as a people, we really need to start thinking keener about the kind of leaders that we want to put in power.
Yeah.
You also mentioned at the beginning how the face of our elections in South Africa, in particular this year, has changed. And you are very much correct about that. I mean, it's been so refreshing, really, to be honest with you, watching all this political debate and the town halls that are currently happening in different provinces. And I mean, you've got all these new, of course, small emerging parties that are pretty significant, and they're really working hard and they're campaigning. And I mean, the face of that, the leadership face of these parties are very inspiring. Not to say I am for any of them, but it is something you cannot ignore. It's a fact you cannot ignore that you have so many new parties and so many new movements coming to the fore, and they've got beautiful, bright young minds, male, female, capable, with merit and dedicated to really drive change and really be diligent enough to really bring forth solutions that we are also desperately, really desperately looking for.
Yep.
But having said that, you may just find that we'll, of course, still be at the back old school, where we still have the old same people running for office. And they don't just get there by themselves, right? Probably a topic for another day. Yeah. Who elects these people? So, without blaming leaders too much, I really do want to you know, pose a challenge to African people, to us, whether you're Christian or not, whether you are a politically inclined person or not. I think people have a responsibility in terms of the choices they make when it comes to the running of their country, their community, and their society. And you always have to ask yourself as an individual and educate yourself in terms of voting rights and just voters' education. What kind of a society and community do you want to live in?
Yeah.
What kind of a society and community are you living in currently? What kind of leader almost represents what you think, or rather the change you think is needed, or the progress you need is needed, you believe is needed? Maybe we don't need the change, we need the progress.
Yeah,
I don't know. Whatever you feel resonates with you. So I think the issue is with, I suppose, the loyalty we have as people. Maybe it's an African thing where we want to be humble enough to, and even loyal enough to, you know, not throw people under the bus, but at the expense of what? And I always say this to young people when I talk about them, don't divorce yourself. I hope they will vote. They should vote. It's important so that you can be able to participate and make a meaningful impact and input in your community.
Yeah.
But you need to always ask yourself, if you're going to sacrifice your vote, at what cost? Because you live in this country, right? So you have a role to play. And I think it's an important question to ask yourself as an individual.
Yeah. You know, Mashenge, on the other side, flip side of the coin, there are, and there's a significant number of young people who, you know, prime of their lives and, you know, exciting, or times that should be exciting in their lives. But when you see the direction that, you know, many of them are taking, it's a life of fun, nightclubs, and, you know, there's conkers and all of these things which are actually filled by young people. I mean, we recently was, I think about last year, reading statistics of excessive alcohol consumption and South Africa leading the pack on the continent. I mean, these are all young people. And, you know, and those who work seem to want to get paid so that they can actually, you know, well, let's get the latest cars, let's get the nicest branding clothing, etc., etc. I mean, we know how it works. And what causes this type of psychology? Do you know at all? I mean, you work with young people.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, this is very crucial because this is the state of socioeconomic ills in South Africa as a whole. And this is the kind of stuff that the church itself cannot divorce itself from.
Right.
Because if anything, you have the very same young people, even in your church, you know, who are part of the problems you're trying to avoid tackling, you know. So the problem is everywhere, right? Nobody can absolutely hide from it.
Yeah.
And the issue of alcohol when it comes to young people, specifically in South Africa, and I say specifically because I even did a similar interview with BBC a while ago on the issue of drinking alcohol as an issue in South Africa among your Gen Z's. It is a problem, and it's a fact we need to accept. If we're still going to fight and argue about that, then we're still far from the solution. We have to accept that alcohol abuse is, excessive alcohol in general is a problem in our country, especially for young people. And of course, this has many reasons why, and other main root causes of it, depression, mental illness, and again, socioeconomic ills that are just so heavy for everybody to bear, that the closest sort of, you know, what is it, outlet rather, is alcohol, right? So I think it's a very sensitive topic as well, that needs time on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's easy to get through that and avoid being part of accountability, avoid being part of something that is progressive, that can help change your own life as a young person, like belonging to a particular movement that's doing great work, or really just aligning yourself to something or some, I don't know, party or work, really. It doesn't have to be politics, and these political parties who all let us down, by the way, because they all, to some extent, all of them are the same. It's the same language, it's different facets, really. It depends on which kind of devil you want to settle with, really.
Yeah.
But there's many other ways to change. You don't have to necessarily be a member of a political party. There are many ways to influence and contribute to your society as a change agent. So I think young people must really get to a level where they employ themselves to such means where you are part of something meaningful that first affects and changes you, and of course, in turn, changes and affects people around you as well. It's very important. I think this is everybody's responsibility.
Yeah, true.
Because our country in general, the landscape isn't looking very good at all for anybody, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a business leader. South Africa's outlook, economic outlook, is rather bleak. And I think it really calls for young people to, I mean, it's, you know, there's mental illness, as I've said, and many other things. But without us allowing that to really just dampen us and suck us into death, really, one should try to come out and see what you can contribute to with your skills, because I believe somebody has something in their hands. There's something you can do. There's something you can say. And that thing fits somewhere. Just try to find that gap. And do it. And collectively, I think we can try to make those small little changes to our community before we even try to attempt to change the world.
Yeah, true, true. +27734703520. Join us in the conversation. We're speaking to Jabulile Buthelezi Kalonji, who's talking to us about young people in leadership. Mashenge, what would you say are some of the blind spots or dangers, if you will, of keeping young people out of decision-making processes in any given organization, really?
So I think the danger of keeping young people out of decision-making processes, decision-making projects, and really just the nature of sidelining young people, that's the deadliest thing any organization, institution can ever do, ever. Number one, you tend to, you stand the risk of running proudly, you know, with beautiful, wonderful programs, and yet there's nobody behind you that you're leading. You think young people are following you, that you're leading them, but they actually nowhere near you because you didn't make them part of your decision-making processes, so you can be aware of what is it that they need and if what, how do you cater for that need. You know, so it's important to, I always say to young people as well, you've got to be in the room. If you're not in the room, we've heard this saying before, then you're definitely the menu.
True.
Right? And I always say to people in the room, where are the young people who we are gathered here for? Because at least one of them should be there. But there's also a danger of putting young people in the room as a token. That's actually quite disrespectful. You know, it's like taking a black face and putting it up there validate who you are or whatever your plans are strategically. And it's similar when we do the same to young people, where we just elect them and bring them in because, okay, For the purpose of being politically correct in terms of stats and whatnot, there's two young people in the room. One is male, one is female. That's a very disrespectful way to include any young person for anything. It's actually very disrespectful to them. You should bring them in the room because you believe in their ideas. You believe in the potential that they carry as young people to lead their own cause for the benefit of their own peers. And also because you respect and regard what they do bring to the table as young people. So they are your colleagues, in essence. But again, as African people, we struggle with this thing of spadala when they come in here and we still expect them to address us as Baba so-and-so, of which it's okay. But in that setting, it's a professional setup, and we always have to allow the professionalism of us bringing different skills to the table to drive a different cause. So I think we need to really work on our egos as well, as leaders, as mentors who head up committees, who chair committees and belong to these spaces, to ensure that, in fact, I personally made a decision to no longer serve in committees in institutions that do not have young people. Whatever office capacity I'm given, if there are no young people around me, I will not serve in that committee because I believe they should be alongside us as we drive these strategies and all these development imperatives for not only their benefit, just generally in terms of driving our society. So it's very important. We need to guard against that. Let's involve them, not because they are a token, but because we believe in what they have to offer, because they do have something to offer, especially when it concerns them.
True, true. In fact, our time is completely, completely over. But I do want to just make an example. I don't know what you would think of this. A couple of years back, those who are familiar with South Africa would know that the South African Postal Services or Post Office, or I don't know how they call it these days, SAPO, was one of the most, you know, a beacon of hope in terms of postal services. This is way before your emails and stuff like that came into being. And I think that they were sitting at a strategic position where they would actually be a huge company today. But I think that it is the lack of the same young people in those organizations that has led this organization to actually be obsolete today. I mean, today when you think of it, you just think of its former glory, where every home would have a postman bringing a letter or something. Now people are on emails, people are sending their parcels, etc., through private sector, which in my view should have been the responsibility of that organization, because it was sitting very pretty. But I think that because of the lack of the involvement of young people, would be coming with new, fresh ideas, would then be obsolete. So I do agree with you that companies would face a danger of even closing down. I mean, if I may be that extreme, if they ignore young people. What's your view there?
Yeah, I think you will be extinct, like dinosaurs, really.
Yeah.
I refuse to include young people. Trust me, you'll be history. I speak from experience.
Yeah.
This is evidence we see everywhere. Including young people is an imperative act. It's actually a matter of life and death for any organization. In fact, I even imply this for me in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the great ideas I have, trust me, they've passed through my little young friends, my cohort of young millennials. Mm-hmm. Millennials and Gen Zs. I mean, some of the social media things I use really, half the time I'm taking advice from them on how to use it. Because truth is, I have gone past that age of being on the digital edge and on my fingertips and on my toes with all. There are things that they need to look up to me for right now in terms of an advisory role that I can play in their lives. And that's purely the regard I really appreciate from them. The advisory role I can play, because of course there is the wisdom that comes with being 40 years old, for example. That's so you don't just get to 40, right? And this is something they also do not have. But at the same time, you cannot insist on being as vibrant as a 25-year-old. You're not 25. This is something you need to look in the mirror and accept that. So when a 25-year-old speaks and gives you an idea about something, trust me, as a 40-year-old, you want to sit down and just pay attention and listen. Take what you can, because they keep, again, just out of jest, they keep you young and tuned into stuff. So you're not left behind. You're not left behind on everything. And there's this walking dinosaur in modern Africa across, we can't do without them. And often we misunderstand them, but I think we just need to sit it out, hear them out. There's times where they also are a bit unreasonable when it comes to us. This is why the Bible always tells us, come, let's reason together. And I love that relationship between seniors and young people. It can be a wonderful thing when each party sits down with respect and hear each other out. I mean, we can create amazing strategies, build amazing organizations, and really lead and drive thriving and resilient, vibrant communities. So we've got to bridge that gap between those two age cohorts. We can't run away from it. This means we've got to have the difficult conversations that are uncomfortable to make sure there's that bridge. You've got to keep it burning. It helps both sides, really.
Beautiful. Well, Jabulile, I must thank you so much for your time. Always, always appreciate you coming through. Completely, completely out of time. We're going to make another time where we can actually get to finding out what are some of the skills that they would have or that they should learn, and how we can equip young people and how they can get involved, etc. Quite a few other things that we may want to look at. But for today, Jabulile, I want to thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you.
Bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.